It's time for our weekly check-in on national politics. Coronavirus, also known as COVID-19, is getting attention from the president and Congress. And as the election season kicks into high gear, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell introduced two abortion-related bills that were quickly blocked by Democrats. Last night, Democratic presidential hopefuls met in another debate with the South Carolina primary coming up. We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Have you been following last night's debate, all the debates so far? What is striking you? What are you watching for this Saturday and then coming up on Super Tuesday? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email ideas@WPR.org. Lauren Gambino joins us now, political correspondent for The Guardian. Lauren, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me.
Let's start with the Democratic debate last night. A chaotic, sort of raucous scene. What did you take away?
Yes, there was a lot of chaos, a lot of talking over each other. I think that was the takeaway this morning. I don't know if you were undecided in South Carolina. I'm not sure if last night's debate helped you. It was really hard. I think there was a clear decision to go after Senator Bernie Sanders, who came out of Nevada in a very strong position. He's clearly now the party's front runner for the nomination. But, in the midst of all these attacks on him, they were sort of attacking each other as well. And it turned out to be just a bit of a melee that we haven't seen quite like that before. Go ahead.
Do we learn much new on the policy front? Are we getting new stuff out of these debates or just new lines of attack for one character or one candidate to another?
Well, it seems like last night was the 10th debate, and it was the 10th time we'd heard them really go after each other on the different their different health care proposals. So it does at times feel like we're just repeating the same policy debates without, but new lines of attack. But I would say, Senator Sanders, especially around foreign policy, there were some new attacks. Senator Sanders has been sort of in the past few days, he commented on Fidel Castro and, saying that while he was an authoritarian leader, he also did, good things for the country. And that's, inspired some real backlash, which we saw come up in the context of foreign policy, but also certainly the candidates just wanting to take some jabs at Sanders. And they compared him to Donald Trump's the way Donald Trump flatters some authoritarian leaders. And, Sanders fought back, but I think that maybe that was the newest sort of line that seemed to really break through and stick, I think.
Let's give a listen to Senator Sanders responding to some of those critiques.
I have opposed authoritarianism all over the world. What I said is what Barack Obama said in terms of Cuba, that Cuba made progress on education. Yes, I think, really? Really?
Yes,
literacy
because there's
programs
no
are bad. What Barack Obama said is they made great progress on education and health care.
Some of the crosstalk you were talking about earlier there, along with former Mayor Pete Buttigieg. So there's been a lot of focus on Senator Sanders, and now the next test comes up in South Carolina. What are people watching for there?
So South Carolina has been billed as Joe Biden's firewall. He doesn't want to say that, but that is the case. And Joe Biden really needs to do well there. For many months now, he's talked about his electability, and that is based on his strength with black voters. This is the first primary where black voters are going to play a very significant role. They're more than a majority of the Democratic electorate in the state. And so Joe Biden really needs to show after falling behind Bernie Sanders now in three consecutive contests, he needs to show that he can not only beat Bernie Sanders, but do it fairly soundly and really, really come out with a strong showing among black voters who vote, in strong numbers for Democrats. I think everyone's watching how Joe Biden comes out. Bernie Sanders has made a really concerted effort to catch up to Joe Biden in the state. He was blown out of the water by Hillary Clinton in 2016. So if he's able to really compete with Biden, I think that's a sign of how much he's improved over these past 4 years. And then, of course, the person who actually won't be on the ballot, but everyone's watching, is Michael Bloomberg. He's not going to appear on the ballot until Super Tuesday, but his spending and his he's sort of this shadow over the field right now, and it's unclear. It's really unclear how he'll factor in just a few days later on Super Tuesday.
It's our weekly look at the latest in national politics. Lauren Gambino is with us from The Guardian. You can join in on the Democratic primary field, the debates, the voting coming up in South Carolina, what just happened in Nevada, who you like, who you're wondering about, what you think about the tone of the debate. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Staying in South Carolina, Joe Biden, former Vice President Joe Biden, got a big endorsement from a key Democratic figure there, House Majority Whip James Clyburn. People have been wondering if and when he'd endorse someone. Here's a listen to him.
As I stand before you today, I am fearful for the future of this country. I'm fearful for my daughters and their futures and their children and their children's future. This country is at an inflection point. It is time for us to restore this country's dignity, this country's respect. That is what is at stake this year.
And he went on to make the case that Biden was the best Democratic candidate to take up that challenge. How big a deal is this for voters in South Carolina?
I think it's a really big deal, especially as we talked about at the top. You know, last night's debate didn't really help clarify the race, and a respected, influential figure like James Clyburn endorsing Joe Biden is kind of the energy that he really needs around his campaign. Polling shows, and anecdotally, a lot of voters in South Carolina have said they haven't made up their mind. And so they are and could very possibly be looking to someone like James Clyburn to weigh in and help clarify the race for them. A lot of voters there say their top priority is to beat Donald Trump. It's not policy. It's not, ideology. It is beating Donald Trump. And there is a sense of urgency around that, especially in the Black community. Which carries a lot of weight in this primary. So I think it was very important.
That's looking forward to South Carolina. Let's look back at Nevada a bit. You wrote about this, the significance of Bernie Sanders pulling off a win in Nevada. What's the significance there?
I think that was significant because he'd effectively came very close with Pete Buttigieg in Iowa. It was closer than expected, but he did win in New Hampshire. Nevada, there was no qualifiers. He won it outright. It was a big night for him. And when you actually dug into the data of who turned out for him, Latinos came out in a really big number. And Latino voters will play a very important role on Super Tuesday in states like California, Texas, later Arizona. So Latinos, that he did so well with Latinos in Nevada is a good sign for him, down the road and how he might perform in California. These big delegate states, and obviously in the primary, the goal is to get as many delegates as possible. So I think, it was sort of a moral victory. These early states are not about collecting delegates. It's all about momentum, and that certainly gave him a lot of momentum. But there were also signs in that victory of how he might do later on. And I think that's where you really saw a lot of establishment and more moderate Democrats start to get really nervous, because they realize if he really gets on a roll and does really well in some of these Super Tuesday states, it's going to be very hard to catch Bernie Sanders. And many Democrats are worried about a Sanders nomination.
Now, how about the rest of the candidates? Where are they putting their hopes on Super Tuesday, which is just around the corner? And as you say, we're going to see a lot more delegates popping up then.
Yeah, you see them sort of all spread out differently. There's more than a dozen states that go. Obviously, California is very important. That's the most delegates of any one single state. So, they have tried to invest there, but it does look like Sanders and then Michael Bloomberg, with his many millions of dollars, is kind of leading the ground game, if you will, or the TV game, because it's California. But then, Joe Biden's made a concerted effort in a lot of southern states that will vote. He, again, wants to show his strength with Black voters. Amy Klobuchar is Minnesota, that's where she'd like to really prove that she can win there. And then, you know, Elizabeth Warren in Massachusetts will vote, and she's in a tight race there with Bernie Sanders. It would obviously be a moral blow to lose your home state. So the candidates are really spread out across the map, and it's sort of just where you think you can gain the most delegates. You're going to spend these final precious days in those states trying to, you know, do the best, because you've got to break a 15% threshold to get any delegates. So you do have to have some sort of a presence. You can't just sort of pop up at the last minute.
Right now, we continue our weekly check-in on national politics. Lauren Gambino is with us, political correspondent for The Guardian. You can join in at 800-642-1234 if you have thoughts on the debate last night, the primary in South Carolina, Super Tuesday coming up, who should drop out, who should stay in, whether you're supporting Democrats or not, who do you want to see running? Call 800-642-1234. We'll go to your calls now. Marcus is with us in Madison. Marcus, hi.
Hi, Ms. Gambino, I wonder if you could respond to this, please. I'd like to just briefly point up the corrupt nature of these corporate fake debates. For instance, the clip you played was not crosstalk. It was Mayor Pete Bott interrupting what Sanders was saying, which he did all night long. Also, it cost over $1,700 for a seat at this so-called debate. And so you heard basically no response from the audience to anything Bernie Sanders said, because none of his constituents are likely to have the dough to spend over $1,700 for a seat. So the entire thing seems to be an event sponsored by the DNC in order to downplay Sanders and artificially prop up the other candidates who so far haven't been in it at all.
Marcus, thanks for the call. Lauren, there's been criticism over the admission fee, for one thing, as Marcus was saying, and people have said that has stacked the deck in the audience against Sanders. What's been the talk on that?
Yeah, you've heard a lot about that. And you could hear, you know, Sanders, he wasn't just deflecting criticism from the other candidates. It was also from the audience, and that was part of it. You know, you got the sense, listening to how the audience reacted, that there were a lot of supporters of the mayor, Pete Buttigieg, and also of the former mayor, Michael Bloomberg, in the audience. That's who they seemed to react to the most. And, you know, Sanders said afterwards, he too criticized the price and said, that's not my supporters, and that's why you didn't hear them. I think, you know, it also gave Sanders sort of another point of contrast. He was able to interact with the audience in a way that, you know, sort of fit his brand. So he seemed to lean into this. But certainly this morning there's been a lot of discussion about why it is so expensive to attend these, and if it's fair, and if it's, you know, small D Democratic, you know, shouldn't these be open to voters and people who will actually be making the decisions and not just those who can afford these very expensive tickets?
Let's bring on another caller before we move on from the debates and the race. Anne is with us in Bayview. Anne, hello.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. It's a question that I have in terms of managing what the audience can hear, and it's candidates talking over each other that was mentioned earlier. Isn't there a way they can just turn off the mics when time is hit so that after minute 15, a candidate has his say or her say, mic is off, someone else has the opportunity to speak? I'm wondering if others feel the same way I do, or if you have any understanding of technology that...
And thanks for the call. There's been criticism, Lauren, I don't know about exactly how they had the mics set up there, but there's been criticism over how the debate was managed and letting the candidates get out of control, talk too long, and talk over each other.
I will say that's not the first time I've gotten that question. Why can't they just cut the mics? And I don't know why they do. I think that might be a bit abrupt for the audience to keep just cutting them off, because sometimes it is nice to hear the end of a thought. But last night I think was I hate to say worse than we've seen before, but they really didn't jump in ways that we've seen other moderates moderators handle these debates. That last night seems to be an exception, and it just got out of hand. I think that also, though, speaks to the tension among these candidates. They are, you know, many of them, this could be their last debate. There's not another debate until after Super Tuesday, and it's unclear that any of them will have this big national platform again, and they were clearly trying to get every word in edgewise and, you know, take every shot at their opponents to really stand out. You know, whether that was the effect, I guess we'll find out. But certainly you could feel the tension, and that was part of it.
And thanks for that call. We're looking at some of the top stories in national politics. Lauren Gambino is with us from The Guardian. Let's move to move off the campaign trail. Capitol Hill, Mitch McConnell, Senate Majority Leader, introduced a couple of abortion bills, procedural votes. What is in this proposed legislation?
So it should be said, neither of these bills passed, but they focused on when you can have an abortion. So the first one was about banning abortions after 20 weeks. And then another one was about what happens when a baby is born after an abortion. It gets at the heart of these culture wars. Those who support abortion rights say these bills are unnecessary, especially the one about how doctors respond in these very rare situations when the result is that a baby is born rather than being aborted. They say, you know, doctors take an oath to do no harm. They would, of course, you know, they already have to care for the baby when it's born. So this law is unnecessary. They think it's meant to divide the caucus and make Democrats take these very difficult votes. I think more broadly, it speaks to an issue that we're seeing increasingly. You know, Democrats used to be a bit more nuanced on abortion. We saw that with Joe Biden. He for a long time, he's Catholic, and he's had more of a nuanced view on this issue. And since joining the race, he's, you know, kind of adopted more of a progressive line on this. So increasingly, the Democratic Party is more far to the left on abortion. And Republicans really think that this is an issue that they can hit Democrats with in 2020. They think they really do believe culture wars will be a winning strategy for Donald Trump, especially when he's trying to attract evangelical voters and voters who are really moved to vote on the issue of abortion. So that is why we saw it come up yesterday.
And then one of the big news stories out there, the novel coronavirus or COVID-19, we're watching it flare up around the world. And what are we seeing when it comes to reaction from the White House and from Congress?
Seeing a really interesting reaction from Congress. It's bipartisan. They are very, they're kind of alarmed, and there's a lot of backlash coming from Capitol Hill over the White House's handling of the response to the coronavirus, especially after we heard from the CDC that it's sort of a matter of when and not if, there's an outbreak in the U.S. So, you know, the CDC warned this week that they are very much preparing for cases here. And, the White House has been roundly criticized by members of both parties for not stepping up to the challenge. We saw even Republicans go after members of the administration in a hearing over how much funding the White House has requested. They said it was far too small to actually deal with what's being expected. The White House requested $2.5 billion, and Democrats and Republicans have both said that's not enough. So, you know, if Republicans are on board for more money from the government, you know it's serious. And so I think this is something to watch. Obviously, Donald Trump does not want to look like the administration got caught off guard, especially in a year where he's running for re-election. So I think, you know, we'll hear him speak about it, and I think it's going to be very interesting to see how forcefully they respond to this after this criticism this week.
And a lot of the president's messaging is focused on not overinflating fears, he says, and bringing up concerns over how this could affect the stock market, which dropped a lot the first couple of days this week. The economic impact of this is a worry for the president and his team, potentially.
Absolutely, because part of his message to, his reelection message is, look at the economy, look how great it is, and it's, how great it's become under my 3 to 4 years in the White House, and imagine what could happen with 4 more years. So if the stock market starts to take a tumble and, we start to actually see more of an impact, then I think that really undercuts that messaging. And it's a risk that the White House really doesn't want to take right now. So I certainly think, yes, he's trying to calm fears. Because the White House's messaging is so out of step with what we heard from the CDC yesterday and what we're hearing from members of Congress, I think at some point they're going to have to address this concern that we're hearing from his own administration and Republican lawmakers as well.
Lauren, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
I've been talking to Lauren Gambino, political correspondent for The Guardian. She joins us today for our weekly roundup of national politics, the latest news from Washington, D.C., and on the campaign trail. Still time for you to weigh in. Tweet us at Central Time WPR. Let us know your reaction to the debate last night, the candidates themselves, the format, the raucous nature, pro or con. Tweet us at Central Time WPR.